Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White is bubbling. He's almost effervescent this morning. Good morning, Whitey.
I wish I was Shrepervescent.
Well, that's the Shrep's version of effervescent.
Yeah.
So you don't need to be Shrepervescent.
No.
You just need to be effervescent.
Yes. I'm going to ask you straight up.
Right.
So the reason we're speaking to Mark Fraser this morning, as you said, former AFL umpire and former AFL player, is the comments that Brendan Goddard made on this station.
On Monday.
On RSN sure. Central. That he would do it if there was good money up for grabs.
Is he looking for a job? Is he looking for work, Brendan? Is that what we're getting to the bottom of here?
Well, meaning I have to play less golf, so I'm a bit worried about that.
Oh, will he?
But my point is, when you were playing,
yes.
Do you think that you would respect, or would you think that a former player would have a better feel for the game and umpire it better than someone that hadn't played at the highest level? Would you respect their decisions more? Would you respect them more out on the field? Would you feel they'd do a better job?
That's a lot of questions. The last one I'll answer first. Would I do a better job? Not necessarily. But there would be more of a connection. I think there would be more of a connection between player and umpire if you know that the person that's making the decision has been through what you've been through. I think that would be just natural. I don't think necessarily they'd be better umpires. I don't think... The whole feel for the game conversation is interesting, I reckon, when it comes to umpiring. The rule is either the rule or it's not.
I disagree with that.
The rule's a rule, mate.
But it's not, because it's an interpretation. It's not really a rule.
Well, no, there are rules.
Well, there are rules, but they're an interpretation of the rule.
Well, there are some interpretations that require decisions, but there are also rules that require decisions. I don't think necessarily players have any greater insight into the game than anyone else who watches it or has been a part of it through the journey, necessarily. Clearly, players have lived the moments a few more times at that level, if we're talking about the AFL and the Goddard situation, that they have lived the moments a little bit more and perhaps understand a few more of the dynamic requirements. But I don't think necessarily that'd be any better. But I think there would be a level of connection to your main point, I think,
yeah,
between player and umpire that perhaps doesn't exist for the other cohort.
So you've got a situation in football where Mark Fraser was the first to do it, and...
Were there any back in the old days that ever did it?
No, I don't. I think there probably was, but
someone
I'm
will tell
a bit
us.
Naive to say that I don't know who those are.
0416905052.
But in current times, Lee Fisher is someone that does it. Now, Lee Fisher was a very good footballer who had a lot of issues with hamstring complaints or hamstring injuries, but he was actually a very clever, smart footballer.
Yes.
Remind me a lot of Brent Prismal. They played
Brent
quite
Prismal.
Similarly. Anyway... I think that it's a really good thing if it happens, personally. You know, we've got David Roden as a goal umpire. That doesn't really have a major impact on how the game's officiated out in the field, obviously.
Have you seen his goal signalling?
Oh, it's outstanding.
It's tremendous.
Yeah, it's choreographed.
How he hasn't got a grand final yet is beyond me.
So, but my point is that I think they should be fast-tracked if there's a keenness to do it. Now, I know that potentially is detrimental on the umpires that come through the grades and are doing it as kids and all that sort of thing. But I do think that it has to be an advantage. Now, as you know, I'd like to bring everything back to cricket. There is no doubt there are more and more former first class and former international players that are turning their hand to cricket.
Umpiring?
Yep. And I think it has to be an advantage in cricket. I know it's a different sport, but just that respect... The understanding that they've played at the highest level, especially for, say, for example, a Blocker Wilson, who has done it, Rod Tucker, who played first-class cricket, didn't play Test cricket.
Paul Rifle.
Paul Rifle's the perfect illustration of it. But more and more are doing it. And I think that even if they don't necessarily umpire better, I think there is that inclination, and it's almost a human nature thing. Well, you know, they've got a feel for the game because they've played at the highest level, or at least the level they're playing at. Sean Craig's another example, who is an umpire at Sheffield Shield level. He played a bit of cricket for Victoria. I think it helps. I think it helps. Just diffuse situations out on the field.
Yes, slightly different requirements.
Jordan Bannister, good text that he did.
Whatever happened to Banner? did he go?
He was a good umpire, I thought, George.
He was a good bouncer. He was a good bouncer, Benno. Good umpire. Whatever happened to Benno? He just sort of disappeared.
Mm.
I don't know what happened. Slightly different requirements from cricket umpiring to football umpiring.
Yes. So
there's a fairly high level of fitness required for field umpiring in particular in the AFL. Not sure how that's changed with the three umpire system and how far they cover, how much they cover. The boundary umpires, who was telling me this on the weekend, do about 17 Ks.
Yeah.
And are struggling to keep up with the new ball movement, even though there's two on each side.
Yeah, there's two on each side.
They're struggling to keep up. So this is the thing, that one of the unintended consequences of a speedier game is it's the injuries through the umpiring ranks at the AFL level. Now, I know there's a dearth of umpires at community level, so we're led to believe in the last month or so with the stories that have been written. The injuries at the AFL level, it's almost getting to a crisis point.
Game's not as quick as it was 6 weeks ago, though.
Game's still popping hamstrings at the boundary umpires.
Well, so it wasn't that long ago there were only two boundary umpires, and then there was a third, and they'd rotate. They'd all have a quarter off sort of thing, I think. I think that's what happened. And now, I think there's a lot of people that wouldn't even realise that there are two umpires on each side.
Yes, so four boundary umpires. Game. Yeah. No, it's not something you pay too much attention to, is it?
No.
Particularly if you're watching the television.
Remember in 1996 that the boundary umpires wore powder blue?
Well, there's some powder blue activity on the weekend in one of the games I was watching for the entire crop of umpires. Must have been a clash. I can't remember which game that was.
The blue, Hawthorn West Coast.
Was it? Hawthorn West Coast. Yeah.
So, because in cricket, particularly in England, it's been going on for a long time that a lot of former first-class players become umpires.
Yep.
It hasn't happened as much in Australia until recent times. Again, that's just my gut feeling, I must confess. We've got a text coming in that Richard Illingworth was ICC Umpire of the Year. I mean, he's an outstanding umpire. But I think it's become a more recent thing in Australia. Anyway, I just think it's interesting because I don't think they're necessarily umpiring poorly at the moment as an umpiring group, but I think it's getting harder and harder to umpire because of the demands of the rule changes and all that sort of thing. I think it's becoming a more difficult game to umpire. I know Darren Goldsmith's made some comments about that in recent times. I've said this on this program before. I think there's a chance to revolutionise the way that it is officiated, that you could actually potentially have a scenario where you have got inside 50 umpires, so zone umpires that specialise. So it might be a situation that, I don't know, I'll use an example. Jade Rawlings, who played as a key forward and as a key defender.
Big Twigo.
I'm just going to use him as an example.
How'd you get the big Twigo into this?
He's someone that's, I don't know, actually. someone that's coached, someone that knows the game, someone who's played as a forward, a key forward and a key defender. But he's someone that could park. He wouldn't be on a chair or something like that, but he could. Someone that could park himself inside 50, and he understands.
He would like a chair.
Yeah. He would understand how the forwards work, how the defenders work, and he would be a specialist umpire for those sorts of, you know, holds, pushing the backs, all this hands in the back, all this stuff. He's right onto it. But he doesn't have to run 450 kilometres a week to be an umpire, or he doesn't have to bounce the ball to be an AFL umpire. That's all.
Christian Ascot-Vale wants to talk to you about all this. 1-300-652-927 is the open line number, of course, on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Daniel. Just a quick one, boys. Just wonder if the AFL come out and clarified the Zerhar and Bontempelli insufficient intent going forward. And was there any discussion about the free kick against Siebel in the goal square in the last quarter of the Collingwood North game?
Was that the one where he hurt his shoulder?
Yeah.
I must confess, I haven't heard anything from the umpiring department on that one.
On any of them.
Insufficient.
No, I haven't heard any clarifications. I must admit.
I thought we would have got one.
Yeah. Maybe we've missed it. Maybe there's a release somewhere we've missed.
I don't think so.
Don't know, Chris, if there's been any further communication from headquarters on the back of that.
I'm sensing you're a North Melbourne supporter, Chris.
Yes, I am. I'm a serial caller. Yes, you're right, Adam. I suppose I did bag Jack the other day, but it's just as a fan watching the game, like, I know we're not meant to have a rule of the week, but clearly there was, with those two decisions, it tells me the umpires were told, if you're going forward and they're kicking to space and it goes out of bounds, it's insufficient intent.
Yeah, Chris, it's sort of that age-old article argument around do they have a rule of the week? And the AFL will always come out and say there is no such thing. But having been in the AFL meetings, the AFL umpire meetings and trainings, I've half went out to training and then went in and
you
saw
You went
their
the umpire training?
Yeah, absolutely. And went in and saw do their review. When
did you do this?
This is a long time ago now.
How many umpires were umpiring? Was it one umpire or three umpires?
Oh, Kisnegon. but they do their physical training and whatever else. They do their bouncing practice and they go and do their running and all that sort of stuff. But then they go in and they have a proper video review session and they will focus on things that they didn't do well the week before. So
like
they will
players.
And say, okay, well, this is the rule we're going to look at. This is what we're going to look at this week. Here's three examples of how we probably didn't get that right. This is what we want to do and all this sort of thing. They went through that two or three times. So human nature is that the umpires themselves are going to focus on that when they go out and umpire the next week. A little bit like a footballer himself. If that, you know, after their review, if the team is focusing on something, they're going to be better on that the next week because they've focused on it in analysis during the week.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, things you focus doesn't matter what you're doing. If you make a point of focusing on something, more often than not, your consciousness will take you towards those things when next time you're engaged in whatever activity that is.
So again, I'm completely guessing here. So based on what we saw with the insufficient keeping the ball in play, I hate having to say that.
Insufficient intent.
There's every chance that the umpires have sat down, done their review, and said, "Look, we're just not getting this right. There's too many boundary throwings, or there's too many this, too many that. That one should have been paid. See that one there? That one should have been paid. We just got to be a bit tighter on that. We've just let that go a bit in the last few weeks."
But are you not okay with that?
I am okay with it, but don't say that it's not.
But it's not a rule of the week. They're just making sure they're getting better at the decisions they're not making.
Yes,
or getting wrong.
So would you prefer? It. Yeah, that's right. That's fair. But would you prefer there to be a situation where it's almost like when a trainer has to say that the horse is going to be ridden differently, would you like there to be on the, when the teams are announced, would you like there to be a situation where umpires are going to be focusing on this, this, and this this week?
No. I think all of this is so overblown, it's not funny. So overblown. Look, it was 2 weeks ago, there was a tightening of the 15-metre kicking. And that's cool. And then there was maybe, and I don't necessarily fully agree with this, on the weekend, the insufficient intent one. Maybe. Who cares? Like, seriously, if you can't work it out pretty quick after the first one's paid, then as players, you're stupid. And as fans, we should be able to get our heads around that too. I don't think it's a massive issue, I must admit. That's just my take. But I think we make way too much of these alterations or the tightening of the interpretations of the rules, I must admit, on any given week. Because it does change in ebb and flow. Because you do get things wrong. Or you're not quite getting it right, is probably another way of saying it. So you want to tighten that up. You want to get that right. The umpires want to get everything right. Now they don't, and we all know that. But I think we make way too much of all of this all the way through the week, must admit.
I don't disagree, but I think fans out there just want consistency from week to week.
Don't they just want the right answer? Or the right outcome?
Yeah, but doesn't that go hand in hand with consistency? That if something's paid one week and they're not paid the next, that's what gets people emotional.
Yeah, now, no,
notwithstanding,
I know what you're
saying. It's a very difficult game to umpire, but that's because, as I said, a lot of it is down to interpretation, not down to a clear yes or no.
Yeah, no, and I understand what you're saying, but I just think things change because they want to get better. It's not changing because they want to change the game.
True.
They're changing because they want to get better
and
get the best outcomes for the rules of the game and the game itself. That's my take on it. I might be Lone Ranger here, but that's how I see it. Let's get to who's on the open line. Now, David's in Baroni wants to talk umpiring. Hello, David.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Going well, thank you.
Just a couple of observations. One thing is, being an MCC member, sometimes you go to games that's not your side's playing, so you can... You know, you take the emotion out of it.
Yes.
One of the points that I do notice with a three-umpire system that's frustrating is that after a sort of boundary throwing where the umpire might be at the front of the pack, the umpire sends the umpire who's umpiring the current, you know, position of the game stays in the corridor the whole time. And that seems to be... I've watched it long enough to know that they just keep doing that. And it's frustrating because once the play is on the outside... and the umpire can't see, he's making a decision just based on, well, has he had enough time, you know? And they start to go into a, they go into a motion where you can tell they're going to pay holding the ball. They move their heads, you know, all this sort of thing, and then they pay that. And I think that's the frustrating thing, that when you kick the ball to the forward line, and you'll see a free kick paid because an umpire is standing to the side, and you don't even know he's there, and he'll pick a free kick, you know, pick out a free kick to the forward or something like that. And that's fine because he's on the right side. But when the game is in the middle and being played, they send to the umpiring the game at the time. He's so far away from the game, and then he rushes in late, you know, sort of thing. And I just don't get that point of it when you've got three umpires that can, you know, that he can afford to be closer to the game, you know, to make those decisions.
Thank you, David. He's responsible.
No, I mean, they've tried a number of different things, particularly at boundary throw-ins, where umpires try and be a little bit more sort of front onto the contest and be boundary side rather than sort of be working into the corridor. Part of the reason why they had additional umpires is to have different sets of eyes at the contest. And I think, again, that has good intentions, but the problem with that sort of thing is that, and this is where I get frustrated, and as you know, I get emotional.
Not as emotional as I used to.
is that an umpire will have a clear view of something and say, that's not a free kick, and then an umpire 180 metres away
comes in
and says, nah, that's a free kick.
Yeah, that's
why
annoying.
Is his view, why is his thought on that so much better when they've both got a very similar view of it? There's those sorts of things that, anyway.
So they defer to the free kick in those situations as opposed to letting it go.
Yeah.
So it's always the one who's going to pay it that gets the overruled.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
It's never the one that says, that's not a free kick. No. He gets the call or she gets the call.
As I'm competitive, you know, I'd be saying, hang on, mate. I saw that. That's clearly not a free kick. Just go and worry about your own thing.
Off the SMS, morning, Half and Whitey. The real problem with umpires is there are too many games that the result is being determined by the umpiring. When a team is on top early, they are paying extraordinary free kicks. Good use of that, early doors. To the other team to keep them in the game. And when a decision should be made at the end of the game, they're not paying them. So many examples this year. I've stopped betting on the games that the best team is denied to a win too many times. Thank you for that. And then another one come through from Bob, who's in limbo, he tells us. It's a great dismount. Come on, boys. No matter who blows the whistle for any decision, half will boo and half will cheer. Well, that's a point, too. And I think, was it Damien's call then, that when you do go and watch as a neutral, which I get to do every week, it's amazing how little influence the umpires have when you're assessing the game and watching the game.
Yeah, because you have such a different perspective on things. Like, one of my best mates is a crazy Richmond supporter. And I just get relentless text messages from him through games that Richmond get destroyed by the umpires every week. And I've got another Richmond mate who is the same. They're just off tap about the umpires. And I'm watching the game, and I didn't think of one decision that went against Richmond that shouldn't have. And so, you know,
it's an easy default position because it's got to be someone's fault that you're not going well.
And so I ignore the text messages because I don't want to engage in it. So, aren't you happy you won three of the last four premierships? Anyway, there's a text here from Andrew from South Yarra. Could you please tell me, Adam, what is the similarities between Brent Prismal and Lee Fisher? Well, the similarities are this. They don't look dissimilar in appearance. They are similar sort of stature. They were neat footballers. They were clever footballers. Footballers that didn't really sort of, they didn't move particularly fast, but they didn't lose their feet often. And they just were methodical about the way they play with, you know, pretty good skills and quite clever footballers. That's all.
That's all.
Answers your question.
Well, good question. Off the SMS. Thank you for that. While we're at the umpires, Scotty Lysette copped 4 weeks last night. And it's not umpires, it's MRO and tribunal. But he copped his 4 weeks for his dangerous tackle on Ned McHenry in showdown number 49. And there's a suggestion that Port Adelaide may appeal. Some stories last night emerging, and then again in the paper today, that they may appeal the four-week ban. I'll throw this to you straight up, Whitey. Knowing that the minimum of careless, severe and high is 3 weeks, and they didn't argue that. They pled guilty to that charge and didn't argue any of the levels of grading. Knowing that the minimum of that outcome is 3 weeks flat, would you appeal a fourth?
Look, in the situation, yes. I actually thought that it was excessive.
the penalty.
Yep. So going, putting my tribunal hat on of all the years at the tribunal, one of the things you used to always hear was manifestly excessive.
Yes.
I just felt that it's a really, I was thinking about this driving in this morning, Half. This whole thing around, I understand you've got to protect the head. But when Scott Lysette tackled in that situation, do you really think he was thinking about he was going to concuss the player?
No, but that was already taken care of with the charge. It was careless.
I understand.
So that's been great.
I understand that. But my point is that 4 weeks for an instinctive tackle, I think there is less time to think about I'm going to hurt the head by tackling as opposed to choosing to bump.
Tackling.
Yep.
We couldn't really bump him in that situation.
No. I'm saying that if you, there's two different cases. If you make a decision to bump,
yes.
I think you need more time to consciously decide to bump in most occasions than compared to tackling that you're going to actually hurt their head. When you bump, there's always that thought in your mind, geez, if I bump, I've got to get this right. Whereas with tackle, I think it's more an instinctive, you're tackling to get a free kick or to get the ball to drop out and all that sort of
it's
thing.
It's an interesting point. I think the thinking has changed on that now when you're tackling, you've got to make sure you get it right, particularly when you're taking to ground with force. And it's that secondary action, which has been the highlighted action for the last 10 years or whatever it's been with all these sling tackles and slam tackles. That's the thing. And once he found himself, Big Scotty's found himself in the situation where he was having to twist and get some real momentum with his torque to get the player to ground, that's when the duty of care comes in. So that's where I think there's no, if I was Port Adelaide, I'm copping the 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Because the tribunal would have taken all that into account last night and gone through the due process and come up with the four. I think it's the right outcome, I must admit.
Okay. I think he should have got 2 to 3, but as I said, it's one of those. What's that?
The minimum was
3. I understand that. We're just talking in general terms. I think the penalty should be around that. I understand the whole thing about protecting the head, but I also think it's not a malicious act. But things are changing. There's almost got to be a 3-year sort of window for, look, we're going to penalise you, but in 3 years' time we'll be penalising you more, but we're going to give you the time to adjust. Because it's such a big change.
Mm. Well, it's a big change from 10 years ago. It's not so much a big change from 3 years ago.
You know what I reckon the big change has been in tackling? And that is wrestling coaches. Because the players are so much better now at tackling. So you're seeing it more and more now with the chicken wing pinged arm. And the player who's being tackled is completely helpless.
Well, this is even more important to get the tackle right.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest...
Is that true, do you reckon?
Well, there's certainly seem to be more of the arm grabs and the wing tackles.
The players are getting to the ground. They haven't got any chance to get their hand out to try and, you know, brace for the fall or something, and their head just gets put in.
Well, the other thing that's contributing to all of these injuries, not so much in this case, is the requirement for players to, at all times, try and get the ball out. And they put themselves in unsafe positions at a lot of times to do so. You look at the games during the weekend where players are tackled and have to get the ball out late. They put themselves in horrible positions to do that.
Yes.
And we're getting a lot of injuries on the back of that too. So we're finding ourselves in a situation where we're trying to keep the ball in flow and putting players at risk on the back of that. So and sometimes it's out of the player's control, the ones tackling or bumping that... They're trying to get rid of the ball from the opposition player, and it's just in flow, and they're just in that moment. And because of the requirement to keep it out, get it moving, or it's a free kick, the players actually with the ball put themselves in a bad spot. That is one of my concerns, I must admit. Craig's in Mount Martha, wants to talk some umpiring with us. Hello, Craig.
Morning, Arthur and Whitey. And look, interesting discussion. I just think one of the issues with the umpires nowadays is that they're scrutinised so heavily. You know, with television, it's a televised television game nowadays, and every decision they make is scrutinised, and they come out with some sort of an explanation, which you verbally hear over the screen, over the television, and sometimes I'll scratch my head and think to myself, why would he say that? Well, I just think, you know, a la Ray Chamberlain, take the microphones off them. You know, I've had to instigate a selective hearing policy at home because, you know, a bit like when the wife of the kids just want something that you don't want to talk about. It just drives you insane. So, you know, and the last thing, Whitey, is, you know, I'm starting to understand your character after all these years a little bit. Total awards to Sereno, fair enough. That was great. But going to umpire training, what's the system there? You know, was somebody paying you or something? Or, you know, what were you hoping to see?
No, that was actually, that was when I was working at Fox Footy and I did a documentary, like a 15-minute thing on what they do. So that was quite some time ago, I must confess. It was down at Monash University. Darren Goldspink was umpiring at that time, and he got involved. It was quite sort of a bit uncomfortable because he got in a bit of a heated exchange.
Did he?
With the umpire's coach. Unsurprisingly, he wasn't overly thrilled that he'd been sort of criticised for
combative
decisions.
At times, that's right. Combative.
And I was sort of told, oh, look, maybe just don't go in there. Maybe because we had cameras and we're trying to get all the good shots. Maybe just stay away from that.
Ah, that's good.
And I'm going, no, we want this. This is the vision.
Kevin Smith wasn't still umpiring back then, was he?
No, but Glenn James waved. You know, grand final in the Sorrento stand. Further, he just waved.
Thank you, Craig. Very humorous work from you too. Enjoyed that. George in Mulgrave. Hello, George.
Good morning to the greatest breakfast talk show host in the world, Harford. How are you?
Oh, well, Georgie, that's a positive pump-up.
Thanks, George.
I thought I'd coin one of your phrases, mate, that's all.
Yeah, fair enough too.
All good. So just two things for me. One on the umpiring is you watch in the next week or two how they're going to ping the fullback, kicking out of fullback and how far they run out of the square.
Well, they're running about 70 metres at the moment.
Yeah, you watch this now. That's going to be tightened right up this week and next week, I've heard. Number two, these balls, when they get thrown in from the boundary line, how come the clock starts when the ball's in the air, hasn't been touched? And how come when the clock starts again, when they ball up in the middle and it's recalled and you've lost about 2-3 seconds off the clock? How much do you reckon they lose every game?
Yeah, that's a conversation they're having, I think, at the moment. At higher levels, about the time lost for recalled bounces. I don't mind when it's thrown in. I don't get too stressed about that because you don't get any recalls and boundary. Well, very rarely. I have seen a couple, but very rarely do you get recalls and boundary throw-ins. But the centre bounce seconds, I think, are a relevant conversation these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's conversations been had or being had at the moment.
Because this is a real frustration I have around coaches saying the game's going too long because the quarters are going out 37, 38 minutes, all this sort of stuff. Well, if you actually take out a lot of this dead time around the umpires waiting for the ruckman to come and nominating and all this sort of stuff, if you add all that up over the course of a game, there's a lot of nothing that's going on where actually game time's not elapsing, which is different to what you're talking about. Mm. But the game, you know, video reviews, that's why a lot of the reason why the games are going out to 36, 37 minutes per quarter.
Well, it's 20 minutes.
Exactly. It's 20
of playing
my
time.
Dad kept saying the same thing.
It's pretty straightforward.
It's 20 minutes.
How they get to that point is up to
exactly
them.
Exactly right. Well, you know, if it goes 37 minutes, that's 17 minutes they've done nothing. So they shouldn't be tired.
Thank you, George. Big Dog's got the plums in order. Good morning, Big Dog.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Going well. How's things?
These umpires got my blood boiling. These Muppets blowing the whistles. I'll give you two examples. Hooker's mark on the weekend in the last minute.
Not a mark.
Didn't mark it.
Not a mark.
Oh, come on, fellas.
Even Whitey said no mark, and he's no mark. Perhaps got some propaganda issues with the Bombers.
I do support Essendon.
yeah.
Not only did the bloke come front on contact as well, but we won't go there either. And then a year ago, or 2 years ago, you had that moron jump the goalpost. No free kick, no 50-metre penalty. There's two losses, which cost us. It's an absolute joke.
Hang on a second. What? You're going back 2 years, Dog?
I could go back further.
Dane Ramphy, you're talking about. Oh, only the greats climb goalposts, man. Let's just keep it nice when we're talking about who climbs goalposts and what we think of them. We've all done that. going back 2 years for umpiring decisions. Goodness me, we've got long memories in footy as fans. But that hooker mark was not a mark. Play on. Right, call, mate.
No, I tried to counsel my mum about that. It wasn't a mark, mum, and it's debatable as to whether he would have been making the distance from that range anyway.
He would have passed it off inside 45. Time for the quiz now. 1-300-652-927 to take on Whitey. No one's ever run the board. $210 lunch or dinner for two voucher at Vlado's, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse. Family business for nigh on 60 years. He says that's a good one. We'll be the judge of that.
I think it is.
But no one has ever run the board.
And I don't think anyone will today. Although Cameron is one of our number one seeds. We can't be one of the number one seeds. You either are or you aren't. He's one of the top seeds, and he's going to go first off this morning. We have a full board of calls. Cameron, good morning to you from Coburg.
Morning, James.
Okay. Number one for you is this. Who holds the record for the highest test score by an Australian batsman?
Matthew Hayden.
Correct. Do you know how many it was?
375.
No, unfortunately, it wasn't. It was 380.
80
against?
On the number, was it?
Zimbabwe?
Correct.
In which state?
2004, I think it was.
No, which state?
Yeah, well, what
state? It was in Darwin. Cairns.
Well, no, actually, was it the Wacker?
Was it the Wacker, yeah.
No, was it the Wacker? Anyway,
but
that doesn't matter.
You
got the question right. That's all that matters. I think everyone was a bit nervous that he was going to make 500, and it was against Zimbabwe, and it kind of, the debate at the time was it really 380? Doesn't really count. Well, 380 is 380, but you know.
Well, it is, but is it?
Exactly. Cameron, question two. I really like this question. Now, Marcus Bonampelli, he's coming into the studio in about half an hour for a chat. His cousin played 322 AFL games across two clubs. Who is that cousin of his?
Ooh. 322 is the number. The
and
number.
First cousin? First cousin?
Club?
320. Well, you've got two clubs to pick from. 322 is clearly the number, the key number.
Is it?
Well, because if you know someone who's played 322 games, you probably get this.
Well, yes, correct. Bit early for a clue, Cameron.
Oh.
No, it'd be nice.
I'm sure it would be.
I've actually heard this story a while back when he first started, but it's not.
No, go on. Go on. Sorry, Cameron. Sorry, Cameron. Simon from North Caulfield. Good morning, Simon.
Morning, guys. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Marcus Bontempelli, as I said, he'll be coming in for the Inner Sanctum in about half an hour. His cousin played 322 AFL games across two clubs. Who is Marcus Bontempelli's cousin?
Oh, yes.
Can you give me a club?
Not yet.
Yeah, can I give him one?
All right, give me
one.
North Melbourne.
Okay. Fair enough.
Boomer Harvey.
Nah, bad luck. Michael from Point Lonsdale. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Good question, this one, isn't it?
Rock solid question.
Nicky Del Santo.
Ah, very good. Well done. Who is Australia's highest-ranked Australian men's tennis player? So we know that Ash Barty's the number one female player, but who currently is the number one man in Australia in world tennis?
Dimonua.
Yep, we'll give that to you. Alex Dimonua. Yep, very good. Michael, well done.
Do you reckon he gets people calling him Dimonua?
Probably does. Question number four for you, Michael. That is the famous voice.
That I don't really enjoy going out, whether it's with mates for a beer or whatever it is after a game.
Who is that? That actually doesn't sound like who it is.
Yeah, I could pick it. It was on 360 last night. I think it might have been as a clue.
He's played at three AFL clubs, this person, Michael.
Lots of clues.
Is he retired or is he still playing?
No, he's still playing.
Four clues.
That I don't really enjoy going out, whether it's with mates for a beer or whatever it is Treloar. After a game.
Not Treloar.
It is Treloar. I was almost going to clunk you then, saying it's not Treloar. It is Treloar. Well done, Adam Treloar. All right.
That's it.
Last question.
I know.
Who am I, Michael? I'm the daughter of a Richmond footballer. I've won an Olympic gold medal, a world silver medal, a world championship silver medal, and three Commonwealth gold medals. I carried the torch at the stadium at the Sydney Olympic opening ceremony. And the sport that I am really good at is a sort of a love that I share with Sherelle McMahon. Who am I?
You're a netballer.
Olympic gold medal, remember? Olympic gold medal.
No, not there.
All right, hello, Michael. Batsy from Ultimo joins us. Batsy, good morning.
Good morning.
Do you want me to read that question out again?
Yeah, that'd be good, thanks.
You read it better than the last time. Who am I? I'm the daughter of a Richmond footballer. I won an Olympic gold medal, a World Championship silver medal and 3 Commonwealth Games gold medals. Importantly, I carried the torch at the stadium at the Sydney Olympic opening ceremony, and I share a passion with Sherelle McMahon.
That'd be...
Sherelle told us last week about this sport. Could have been a chosen sport.
Not someone heart, bad luck, Bunty. Gone. Ed from Newport. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. I was going to go Nova Peris Kneebone, but...
No, gone. He was going to go. Well, we'll say... Now, I'm not sure whether Nova's name is hyphenated, but this person's name might now be hyphenated. Daniel from Bundalong South. Good morning, Daniel. No, he's gone. He didn't know. Spiro from Burwood. What a big chance for you, Spiro.
Yeah, it's a chance.
Who is it?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Anyone that's brought in the flag, I know it's the Olympics. All I can remember is Andrew Gaze, but he's not the man.
No, he's not female, as far as I'm aware.
That's a concern. That's a concern. You've got to go back a bit for the gold medal. The gold medal's the key. The daughter of the Richmond player, now I wasn't aware of that, I must admit, until you said that this morning. So the gold medal's the key. You've got to go back a bit.
Gary from Eltham. Good morning, Gary.
Morning, Adam.
Do you know the answer to this?
Tim Crow?
No, not a bad answer.
Not a bad answer.
Not a bad answer, but not the correct answer. I think that Kim Crow back in 2000 would have been a bit young to carry the torch at the Olympic opening ceremony.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. Maybe 12 years earlier, she won the gold medal.
Ollie from Frankston. Good morning, Ollie.
Maybe Seoul.
Is it Debbie Flintoff-King?
Bingo! It is. Well done, Ollie. Congratulations.
Fresh from a crisis meeting at the Melbourne Vixens. Good morning, Sherelle.
Good morning.
Any truth to the rumour there's a crisis meeting?
No.
Just asking.
No truth.
I need to get aggressive.
No
Will you be going into the mid-season draft to try and get new players?
There's no mid-season draft in SSN, so no is also the answer to that question.
Is your list manager under pressure?
No is also the answer to that question.
Is there an issue that there might be a grand final hangover and that your team have got ahead of themselves?
Oh, boy. No, that is also the answer to that question is no. So, okay, moving on. No, we don't have a premiership hangover.
I've just asked the question.
Absolutely
no need
not.
To attack me.
They're very defensive. Very defensive. Very aggressive almost.
No, we've obviously would have liked a bit of a different start to the season. That would have been nice.
So what's happened?
We're fifth on the ladder. We're only one win outside the top four, so...
It's always a positive, a silver lining. You haven't won a game yet, but you won one outside the top four. And the team that's won 2 games is creeping up on you, just by the way. That with the minus, what they have? Minus 12 point start?
Minus 10, I think. They're down 12. To minus
6. Minus 4 now. So they're only a game behind you. So the team that started 3 games behind you before they started are now only 1 game behind you. Oh, goodness.
That is true.
What's happened? All seriousness, 56-51 was the score on the weekend.
Yes.
The Lightning defeated the Vixens. And by the way, the Magpies went down to the Giants. They got smacked, 66-54. So not great for Victorian netball in the first couple of weeks. We're zipping four. What happened on the weekend?
Yeah, the Lightning got a bit of a jump on us early is what happened. So at halftime, we were actually down by 11. And so in the second half, there was a little bit of a fight back, which was nice.
Good.
Nice to see a little bit of spirit. But it was certainly a disappointing way to start the game. And that, you know, you talk about a crisis meeting. Whitey, you're certainly not having crisis meetings. But one of the things in our review process that we spoke about was finding a way to really engage and bring that energy right from the start of the game, because that is not what happened. And the second half, which we won obviously by 6, shows that this group, although it's really young, 2 of the athletes who are out on the court, for a lot of the game, it was only their second game ever. That shows that they can really match it with one of the teams that was in the finals last year. Really, really great team, the Lightning. So... I know I said this last week too, but there's positives to take out of it.
Well, as Daniel and I were saying, you know, the game was over at half time, so it doesn't really matter what happened in the second half.
Well, but the reality is it wasn't. There was, I think we got to within 4.
He'd be missing
us now. He is. So in the last quarter, we were making a real run at them. So the game actually wasn't over at halftime. I would never think that when we were 11 goals down. But defensively, I think you ask how it happened and why it happened. I think Kara Konan, who is one of the goalers for the Australian Diamonds, was brilliant on the weekend. And so we kind of needed to find a bit of a way to shut her down as well. So that was something that we spoke about too.
Are we worried about pressure at the source or more the defensive one-on-one? Was that our concern?
Just the defensive pressure all over.
Mm.
Yeah, because I think particularly in netball at the moment, often there is a really strong, often tall shooter. So you need to build the pressure before it actually gets to them. Because once, if you're waiting to the last line of defence to start building that pressure, it's too late.
That's why we have a chat about that in the Australian Rules Football Fraternity, that it's not the defensive matchup that's a problem. It's the ball getting there too bloody
quick
and too easy.
Yes.
That's the issue. Don't worry about the one-on-one. Worry about what's happening up the field to get it there.
Yes, exactly.
We've got a text suggesting that you need the Bomor banana, the magic banana.
Bring out the banana.
Have you thought about initiating the magic banana to the Vixens?
I haven't. And the only reason is because of COVID restrictions. Otherwise, I would have. Well, you can't be passing around a banana to share at the moment.
No, well, you probably could if you're zipping two, but if you're 2-0, you probably wouldn't bother with it. But if you're zipping two, you might get the magic banana.
Hoping to head up to Sydney on the weekend, obviously, with all the little positive tests that are happening, not all the ones, but there's only a couple, but
yes,
these things can impact. So the plan is to head up to Sydney to play the New South Wales Swifts. So the challenge doesn't get any easier.
They've had a tough start. Were they in the top four last year? Did they play finals as well last
yes,
year?
Yes, they did.
So that's all three teams, other than yourselves, in the first 3 weeks.
Correct.
So that's the toughest possible start.
Well, they were the champions. Well,
but I'm just saying that that's
they
the toughest
expect an easy draw.
Start.
No, we're not expecting anything easy.
It's not a weighted draw, though. There's eight teams that play each other, twice?
And also, there's not many easy games at the moment in SSN.
Mm.
So even although we'll run through...
Well, some would argue that they're easy games against the Vixens.
Now that's disrespectful.
That's McInnes, unfair.
I'm with you. I will support you on this.
I went too far then.
I will support you on this.
I apologise. I went too far.
Why are you smiling?
You'd probably want them early in the season, though, wouldn't you?
You're really enjoying this.
I'm not.
Well,
sure.
Adam White.
You went into coach sort of mode. You sort of got a bit defensive.
Every time you ask me a question about the Vixens, you say I get defensive. I'm not sure what I can do.
You don't.
Do you want me... anyway, maybe I'll change my approach, will I?
No, you're doing a great thing. You're doing great things, and we love having you. And despite the fact that he's harassing you now, it's a workplace harassment.
Mm.
If we can just go outside and see if we can find the HR office.
Yeah, I might.
We can sort this out. We can sort this out. Might take you a while, but we'll see how we go. It's a nice time to be alive if you're a Western Bulldogs supporter, because they are sitting pretty second on the table, 7-1 at the moment. And one of the reasons is the form of their captain, Marcus Bontempelli, who's a part of our team. Bont, good morning.
Good morning, mate. Great to
have
you back.
Great to have you with us.
Yeah, it's been a little while since I've been back in studio, I reckon. So feels good. Feels normal again.
Well, things are going pretty well for you, and highlighted by your recent acting performance in the Amy commercial. Congratulations.
Thank you. And we were just sort of laughing a little bit off air, you know, in football clubs and probably in general. You do anything different and you're open to feedback. And I think the best feedback I got was it was not bad. And in a football club, if someone tells you it's not bad, that's pretty good. Normally it's, you haven't done yourself any favours there. So, hearing that, I was okay. I could sort of move forward and know maybe I've done okay.
That's Academy Award winning type stuff when someone says it was not bad. Yeah. It's like you are.
Top of the pops.
Spot on. So, I think I'll take that and just run with it a little bit.
When you get those requests and someone comes and says, "We want you to do this commercial," do you sit there and go, "Oh, I don't know, this could be really pear-shaped"?
You do a little bit. And I think sometimes you just got to, you know, back yourself in. And not that I've had a great deal of prior experience, but I thought something a little bit different. I probably haven't done before, and I'm a bit, you know, always open to I guess new things and wondering how I might fit into that world a little bit. But I think it's only a you know, dipping my toe in the water. I'm not sure I'll divert fully into that into that industry. I'll probably stick to footy for a little bit longer. But it was pretty. It was a fun ad to do as well, which was part of the appeal. Yeah. That I could see it would be sort of humorous as well, sort of on my own behalf. Even it meant people laughed at what I was doing. So that was probably a big driver in the end.
Yeah, you did a bloody good job, I reckon. Bloody good job. Have you seen Ferris Bueller?
Yeah, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah.
Is that the vibe we're trying to get from that?
A little bit. I reckon that was mentioned for sure.
Yeah, right.
So changing. If that hit, great.
Yeah, that's what I took out of it.
Oh, good. There you go.
Concerned about the bloke cutting the hair, though. I'm concerned about him. I'm not sure he's. I'm going to him anytime soon. I haven't got no hair, of course.
It was a genuine, I think, though, a bit of a concern that someone would lose their ear in the, you know, with all the hands flailing around. But he'd done it before, so he was very good, the barber. And yeah, he made some great facial expressions, and I felt genuinely disappointed when he turned to look at me. So the emotion was conveyed properly. Yeah.
It's a real lingo going on too. Yeah. Emotion conveyed, all that sort of stuff. I'll tell you what you're doing. You're getting the emotions of the Bulldog supporters very much involved in the contest these days. A fantastic game on the weekend against the Blues. Not so much because you dominated all the way through, but the fact that you found a way to find solutions to the problems you were facing in the second half in particular must have been very satisfying.
Yeah, it was. Like, it seemed like we probably started the game well, I guess, you know, from a momentum point of view, managed to put a couple on the board. But really then, you know, Carlton, who I think we all, you know, respect the fact that they're a good team, and their stuff around the football and even in the forward half and the players they've got in the back end are all very good players. So we needed to find a bit probably, you know, post half-time. And even then, we felt like we were still doing things, I guess, relatively well in the third quarter, but we weren't, you know, putting it into scoreboard impact. And then it just sort of felt like the back end of that third quarter, we had a few good moments. There were a few sort of contests that you felt like, I think, you know, we built a bit of momentum up this quarter and managed to then, you know, bridge that into the fourth. So, yeah, good win after not playing our best for, you know, a half or, you know, 2.5 quarters.
And I was going to ask you about the previous week when you were playing against the Tigers. The reverse of that happened, where they were able to overrun you in that second half. Was that spoken about? Did that form part of your strategy in being able to finish a game off well?
A little bit. It does definitely form part of your thinking going into the next game, because probably the way we've treated it more so in recent times, and other clubs may do this too, but we review games less in the sense of the previous game and more in terms of the coming game. Like, if this was a part of our fault in the Richmond game, what do we have to do to make sure it's not in the next game, in a way? So you're always sort of bridging from game to game. And yeah, it did form part of our build up and thinking, but clearly then, you know, we're in a somewhat similar position, but, you know, we needed to fix probably the contest and the stuff around the ball and make sure that was right, and then felt like the rest of our, you know, game would probably come to the floor. So yeah, it always presents as a challenge, but felt like we managed to get that better and right in the second half.
We were talking yesterday about Patrick Cripps with Sam Doherty. He was in here yesterday and talking about the pressure that's on him at the moment. He's not playing particularly well. Everyone talks about his contract. Now, you're in a different situation in that you're playing unbelievably well, but people are still talking about your contract as well. I'm just interested from a... Does that play on your mind at all, that the outside noise about what you're going through behind the scenes? And does it change the complexity of the conversation because you're captain and the whole thing about dedicating to the cause and all that sort of thing? What goes through your mind in... Because you've got one of the biggest decisions of your life to make at the moment.
Not in terms of does the contract play on my mind, not personally, because I think that's a sort of separate conversation to my football, and obviously playing the best I can, you know, captaining the club probably the best I can, but, you know, being a reliable teammate is always my number one focus. So for me to continue to focus on those three things is really all I think about. And obviously week to week, us being able to grow as a team and how I continue to influence games in the best manner is sort of always my focus, regardless of sort of what's happening in the background. So that's probably my focus. I know at times it's difficult. It can become part of the storyline for some people, but at this stage it's not for me. And I guess re the discussions, like you said, it is an important decision, which, and I've probably said this all along, it takes as long as it sort of needs to, that I won't be rushed into, you know, a decision. But the most important thing for me is that the dialogue and the conversation between, obviously, my manager Tom and the club is going well and is important, and that's really the key for me, and it will get to, obviously, the result whenever we do. But as long as, I guess, people understand that the dialogue's really good and both sides are happy, then that's the main thing for me.
Do you understand the interest, so the intensity with, say, a Cripps because he's not playing particularly well and the club's going okay versus your situation, you're flying, the club's going well, so it sort of feels like, oh, everyone thinks you'll sign because you're happy and you're captain and all that. So I think, do you understand the speculation, the pressure that comes with it?
Yeah, I do. I totally get it. But I think each situation's different as well. Mm. And, you know, there's a number who are probably going through similar circumstances and they'll all deal sort of with it different. So, yeah, that's probably, you know, what's happening in this case. Yeah. Mm.
There's plenty happening in the world of the Bulldogs and you, Bont. It's great to see you in such hot form, mate.
Yeah, good
really
to
pleasing
back.
To watch. And great to have you back in the studio
good
as
to
well.
Be back. So thank
and
you.
High-fiving Sheryl McMahon, two of the greats. Sitting in the same studio. Big night, Saturday night, 7:40. Check your local guides. Port Adelaide hosting the Bulldogs. You'll see the Bont in action. Go get it, mate. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And yeah. I love the game, and it's a really important part of the game for mine. And the better, more experience, and I've been harsh on this, that past players respectfully have a better feel for the game because they've been there, they've experienced it. So I think it can only benefit. And it gives a pathway for younger aspiring umpires that are out there grinding each weekend at junior level at Traralgon District Junior Footy Leagues that are umpiring four games in a row. And they got light at the end of the tunnel.
That was the voice of Brendan Goddard, St Kilda and Essendon champ. And he was on with Gareth Hall on Monday morning on RSN Central, 10:30 Monday to Friday here on RSN 927, talking about umpires becoming full-time and encouraging young umpires to get into the system and have the pathway and the opportunity to make it a career down the line. And he also said that he would do it if they paid him enough, which was a very, very nice dismount from him. Now, Mark Fraser is a former Bomber and Magpie in the playing days, went into umpiring after that, so he's lived all this sort of stuff. And he's seen it from both sides, and I thought we'd track him down to find out a bit more about what his take on this is. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
The full-time component of this conversation, it's been bounced around for years and years and years. Why don't we make umpires full-time? Would it make any difference in your eyes if umpires became full-times in terms of the quality of output we get on the weekend?
No, I don't think it would make too much difference. Sort of the umpires do a hell of a lot and they've improved a lot in a lot of areas over the last sort of, since I've been doing it. I don't think that full-time is necessarily the way to go. There's only so much you can do. It's not like a football club where you have to practice team rules, have to practice different skills, all that sort of stuff. And they do a fair bit of coaching and, yes, they analyse their games thoroughly. So I don't see how it could be a full-time job.
And so we were talking this morning as well about former players getting into the system on the back of BJ's comments the other day. I mean, you've lived that. Is there a different level of... Respect's probably not the right word, but understanding between a guy like you who went from playing to umpiring and the players as opposed to just someone who's come through the ranks as an umpire and the players at AFL level?
Yeah, I think there is sort of that initial respect there that you get sort of realise that you've been there sort of on the field of battle as well, as they used to say. But if you stuff up a decision, they're still going to get cranky with you and annoyed. And I've been told plenty of times when I was umpiring that I should know better than that.
So maybe it's worse because you've been a player, Mark.
Yes, possibly, Cheryl. So I don't know whether it helped a great deal a lot of times in that regard.
Well, you've been involved with the AFL, in the AFL umpires from a physio point of view for the past 10 or so years. What's changed over that period of time in terms of the way the umpires prepare, what the commitment is for them and what they put into it? Has it changed significantly in that time?
Well, they've become more professional, similar to the clubs. Sort of a lot more time is put into their programs in regards to their training. So when I initially started, they had a part-time sort of person who was doing our fitness, and now they've got a full-time high-performance manager. They just had one coach when I started. They've now got six coaches. So they're doing and continuing to try to improve the standard of umpiring all the time. But as you well know, the game changes. The rule interpretations change, so that makes it all a lot more difficult. And the NRL have the full-time refs, and there's still controversy with that occurring sort of week in, week out, even though they're full-time. So I don't know whether it's going to change sort of things a great deal if you go full-time. Depends on, with Brendan, with the wage kind of thing. If like the average wage for the umpires is sort of, you could live on that. So it's not just something you can't live on if you wanted to as, do it as a full-time profession. However, it's certainly all the other guys, all the guys who are umpiring do have other jobs.
Do you think, Mark, you had a better feel for the game because you'd played it at the highest level, translating that across to umpiring?
I think you have more empathy sort of for, to the, from the player's point of view. So some of the stuff now sort of with the deliberate out of bounds where it's sort of not sort of the intent of sort of not sufficient intent to keep it in play, that sort of stuff. Sometimes I find that a bit difficult because I know being there when you've got people running at you, it's going to hammer you. Some those sort of things, you're not thinking about whether I'm trying to keep it in play enough. It's sort of just trying to get rid of it so you don't get clobbered. So some of those things I think you certainly have a lot more empathy for. But the way the AFL's moving and how they want to keep the fans engaged and the play sort of high scoring, that sort of stuff, we have to modify things. So that's why the rules are sort of made the way they are these days.
News yesterday announced in the world of domestic cricket in Australia and the WBBL, Simon Helmut will be taking over the reins as the senior coach, the head coach of the Melbourne Renegades. He joins us on the program. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Half. How are you, mate?
We are very well, thank you. Nice to have you with us. And a nice appointment as far as we're concerned, back as the head coach of the Renegades. You've taken the boys for a couple of years. Now it's the girls' turn.
Yeah, look, I loved my first 4 years with the Renegades men back in the day, and now it's a new challenge to work with for the Renegades women's side. I had had the opportunity to be an assistant coach with the group last season. Wasn't an overly successful season, unfortunately, for us, but looking forward to the coaching opportunity and working with the girls, and hopefully have a much improved Big Bash in 2021-22.
Does this mean the overseas T20 coaching is sort of on hold for a bit? Is that taking you away from that, or is it able to fit in hand in glove?
I think it's on hold for all of us at the moment.
Oh, yes.
Especially with what's happening over there, and I suppose I can thank my lucky stars. This is probably the first year half that I haven't been working over in India or, in fact, over in Bangladesh, and my thoughts and prayers are for all my friends and family over there because they're going through a really, really tough time. But obviously, back at home, half working with the Renegades last season was very enjoyable and nice to be back in the Big Bash fold. I really, really enjoyed it and look forward to the extra responsibility this year, and hopefully will be a really, really big season for the Renegades.
Simon, we just spoke about the fact that you were in charge of the men's team for a couple of years, right back when the BBL started, and across different teams across the world. What's the difference when you're now stepping into coaching female athletes, or is there a difference? And how much experience have you had in that space?
Yeah, that's the question I've been asking myself, Sherelle, and I look forward to speaking to you about that later
sure.
down the track, and also Hark with his job with the Blues, and you too, Whitey. But I suppose... But having an education background, I've always been of the philosophy that you're teaching individuals and you take the gender out of it. We're all different. We all behave differently and we play differently and like to be taught differently, I suppose. So for me, Sherelle, it's understanding, how to get the best out of individuals. But what I do believe, though, in the female space in cricket right now is I think it's a little different to maybe how some of the guys have been brought up. It might be changing now, but certainly back in the day, 10 or 12 years ago when I first worked with what was called the Victorian Bush Range or the Spirit Team, the Victorian Girls Team, is some of the girls didn't have the same free play in the schoolyard or in the backyard as what maybe some of the male, of the boys did. And I think that's changing. But the biggest aspect of the girls' game that I think we can all improve is the reading and understanding and the game-sensical approach where, the free play that maybe the boys have had in younger years probably gave them a leg up when it came to, getting into competition phase, whether it be at youth level or even at senior level. So, yeah, Sherelle, they're the things I'm really looking at. We've got some really good, strong leaders in at the Renegades with Molly Strano and Jess Duffin and and Sophie Molyneux. So we've got some girls that I'll be really looking forward to working with and asking them that same question on how best can we get the best out of the group.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting answer. Hey, Simon, there's been obviously a lot of change in Victorian cricket, and there's still going to be more change. Is it just the Renegades WBBL team, or will you still be involved with the men in an assistant role? There's a few things that are sort of up for grabs at the moment.
Whitey, I'll still be involved with the men's program as well as obviously coaching the women's program, and that's what I did last year. Just this role has obviously been elevated now from the women's point of view. But look, for the Renegades, it wasn't an awesome season for us. We've got lots of areas that we need to improve. Look at our list and look at our squad, and that's what we're doing right now with both teams, as well as then look what are ways in which we can improve to make sure that we're back in with a fighting chance when it comes to finals time.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.